Radiotopia.
Welcome to the Kitchen Sisters present.
From PRX.
We're the Kitchen Sisters, Davia Nelson
and Nikki Silva.
Hi, I'm excited to tell you that one of our favorite Radiotopia siblings, Ear Hustle, is back with a new season. Ear Hustle is a show about life in prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast. Co-hosts Nigel Poor and Erlon Woods have recently been spending time at four California prisons and have a season's worth of funny, surprising, and unforgettable stories to share. In a recent episode, they were able to visit a groundbreaking prison hospice where they spoke to men who are grappling with the reality of dying inside prison. Also coming up this season are stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells, complicated mom-daughter relationships in prison, and incarcerated people who wonder whether they've become too comfortable behind bars. Stories about life on the inside told by those who live it. Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts. The Kitchen Sisters Present is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hi, all. Davia here. Our friends over at Trax and PRX have launched a new podcast, The Genius Generation, and we want you to get in on it. The Genius Generation, innovative kids, tweens, and teens who are making discoveries, taking on the issues and problems they see around them, and inventing new solutions using science. It's hosted by Danny Washington, a young science communicator dedicated to inspiring and educating youth about all things science. Danny, the first African-American woman to host a science television show in the United States, interviews these young problem solvers and inventors and shares their stories of innovation and inspiration. Young people looking around the world they're growing up in and seeing things can use some major improvement, sounding the alarm and not accepting things that they are, but using their smarts and ingenuity to invent the change they want to see. Youth on Fire. Today, the Kitchen Sisters present The Genius Generation and Danny Washington.
My name is Ananya Sridhar and I'm 17 years old. 5 years ago, I decided to take on the problem of lead-contaminated water head-on. This is my story.
Hey, I'm Danny Washington, and welcome to The Genius Generation, the podcast about young people who are changing our world in big ways. On this week's show, my guest is high school senior Ananya Sridhar. In 2016, Ananya heard the news about the water crisis in Flint, Michigan. And despite
I'm Danny Washington. I'm the host of The Genius Generation, where I sit down with inventors, entrepreneurs, and explorers to hear their stories about their amazing discoveries. I'm a science communicator and ocean advocate, the co-founder of Big Blue and You, and I'm also the Mocha Mermaid.
I was really struck by the story in Flint because, as you mentioned, lead poisoning is something that impacts young children, and I was a young child myself. And serendipitously, I was taking a chemistry class at the time, and my chemistry teacher showed us a litmus test, which is just a piece of paper that you dunk into water and it changes color based on its pH level. And all of a sudden I thought, why can't we do this for lead? If in Flint, Michigan, they didn't know that they had this problem until it had affected so many young children, why can't we catch it earlier? And that's really where the litmus idea was born.
The Genius Generation, I am super excited about. It is a brand new podcast that we released that focuses on young people under the age of 18 who have either discovered a new concept, built a brand new business, or creating groundbreaking ideas. These young people are literally changing the world. The challenges that they're conquering or looking toward fixing are global and they're massive. A lot of times we think, oh, the government or these bigger entities will take care of, but no, these young people are like, I'm going to figure out how to fix this and I'm going to do everything in my power to help.
My name is Kieran Treather. Since I was 11 years old, I've been working to put an end to hunger in my community and beyond. This is my story.
One of the young men that I remember interviewing, his name is Kieran Treather, and at like 11 or 12 years old, he started an organization to help with food waste.
1 in 4 children, 1 in 6 families across the United States are hungry. As a nation, we waste 40% of all food that we produce. And if we could reduce that food waste by just 3/10, we could feed every single hungry person. The problem is, it's hard to link the groups that have excess food. Say, the convention center that had a huge banquet and finds itself with hundreds or thousands of meals. Or a sports stadium that has lots of meals after a game is done. Or a restaurant. It's hard to link those groups with charities serving the hungry. So Waste No Food enables a smooth transaction between the groups that have excess food and the charities serving it. We have a web platform and we have a mobile platform. And in under a minute, food donors can post what excess food they have. Charities in their area get alerts on their phone. And if they're able to use it, they can claim it. And through this seamless transaction process, we've been able to donate millions of meals to hungry people.
That is absolutely brilliant. And to think that 40% of all food that's produced in this country is wasted, oh, that drives me crazy. So yeah, super inspiring stories because children just have this really clear sense of justice and of fairness and compassion. And that to me is something that I think a lot of adults lose as we get older because of just the hardships of life. But with young people, they still have that clarity. And that's really what the essence of the Genius Generation is all about. It's young people who are willing to take the leap and figure out in their own way a solution that makes sense for the problem that they're trying to solve.
What drew you into this world? How did science and nature become your beat?
I fell in love with nature and specifically the ocean as a child growing up in Miami. It was kind of one of those things that it was irresistible. My family spent a lot of time at the beach while I was growing up, from when I was an infant through my teenage years, and that was always a place of peace and of rest and of rejuvenation. My curiosity led the way, just wanting to know what lived under the waves, what were the things that made the ocean work. That fascination with aquatic life has always been there. The physiology around it, I think it's so cool how fish can breathe underwater. I also love marine mammals who breathe air, but like still obviously live in the ocean. And like most kids, I was obsessed with dolphins and whales and sharks, all the charismatic megafauna that people pay attention to in the ocean. But as I continued my studies, I recognized that the ocean was just so much more than those particular animals. The ocean is a diverse, interesting place to see the interactions between marine life and how they all depend on each other and how we as humans depend on the ocean for life on land. And all the systems and things that are going on under the sea are directly impacting our lives on a daily basis. And I'm definitely a forever student, and I get to meet brilliant people in different STEM disciplines, and I learn from them all the time as I'm shooting different television shows or recording podcasts. And I think that's one of the best things about the work that I do.
Ariel, listen to me. The human world, it's a mess. Life under the sea is better than anything they got up there. The seaweed is always greener in somebody else's lake. You dream about going up there, but that is a big mistake. Just look at the world around you, right here on the ocean floor. Such wonderful things around you. What more did you looking for? Under the sea, under the sea. Darling, it's better down.
When I was younger, in addition to being fascinated by marine life, I was also fascinated by the idea of being a mermaid. But I saw the movie, The Little Mermaid, the animated film by Disney, when I was about 6 years old. And that storyline, oh my gosh, I was obsessed. every time I had opportunity to play with my cousins and hang out in the pool, like, we were, of course, going to be mermaids. So fast forward to now, I'm 34 years old, about to be 35, and I'm still loving this concept of being a mermaid. I'm the Mocha Mermaid. And I live it out through just having fun. I own a couple of mermaid fins that I take with me when I travel. I actually can swim in the fin. It is a functional thing that I wear. But I use it because I think it's a great entry point for conversation around the ocean. Let's say no one's really interested in, like, marine animals and ecology and marine biology and all of that. Great. But if they see some random chick on the beach with a mermaid fin, I think they're going to ask some questions. And so that's really why I decided to use that as a moniker, as something that's kind of like an alter ego for me. I also appreciate the mythology behind being a mermaid. Every culture around the world has had some type of water deity or water being, half fish, half human type of deal throughout history. And a lot of people don't recognize it. It's not just Ariel from The Little Mermaid. It is across the board. We see stories of Mami Wata in Africa or Yemanya in Yoruba culture. And there's also the Selkies of Ireland, which were half seals, half human. And I think that there's something to that. I think there's a story there. I think it's a reflection of the duality of water and the ocean itself. You know, on one hand, the ocean is a nurturer. It nourishes us. It provides for us food, protects our climate, all these things. But at the same time, the ocean is also a destroyer. Sea level rise, if we're dealing with a tsunami, if we're dealing with all these catastrophic things that water can create, we're seeing this duality in real time. And being a mermaid kind of embodies that duality. Throughout mythology as well, you see these mermaid characters or water beings being, like, either alluring and beautiful, but also very dangerous. And so I like that. I really appreciate that. I think it speaks to the divine feminine and how we need that fierce mama energy right now in our world, because we're dealing with this environmental crisis. Climate change is a crisis that we need to tackle right now.
Okay, what's up, people? My name is Justin Schaefer here, also known as Mr. Fascinate, and this is the STEM Success Summit. We are bringing you amazing people from diverse backgrounds that are just killing the game in STEM, and they are here to provide some insights for you and also to help develop a community of folks that you can look to your left and right and see that there are other people like you in these spaces that are trying to do the same things. So I'm here with a very special guest, a mentor, a role model of mine, Dani Washington, the Mocha Mermaid herself. You became that person that you wanted to see.
Can you talk about being a young Black woman, a young African-American woman in the world of science and a science host? You've paved a path here.
I'm really humbled by the idea that I was able to host the first show, you know, as an African-American woman here in the States. One thing I will say is that, I mean, it's wild to think that 2016 was the first time that a Black woman had hosted a science show. Meanwhile, people in the UK have already broken down that barrier, and they have lots of women of color who have been a part of natural history series and whatnot. I'm always happy to figure out ways to open doors for others. That is really the core of my work. And I've just enjoyed the journey. It's been tough. It's been hard. Like, this is not a straight path that I've been on, but I'm grateful for the fruits of that labor and the willingness to go into the unknown. Because when I decided as a 21-year-old that I wanted to pursue this type of career, I had no idea how to do it.
And when you were a little kid, what were you watching or hearing story-wise about science and about, like, how did you even tick into the idea of, aha, there is this place called science storytelling? Or...
Well, like a lot of kids who grew up in the 90s, it was Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Bill, 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 Bill.
Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Imagining distances in space is difficult because everything is so far apart. But think of it this way. Let's say that this miniature soccer ball is the size of our sun, and it's right on the goal of a soccer
field. He was my first introduction to science storytelling. I would watch his show religiously after school. During the week, I remember my aunt would pick me up sometimes, and me and my cousins would just geek out watching his show. And the reason why I liked Bill was because he was enthusiastic. He was energetic, and he was also passionate. And he could have been explaining, like, the simplest thing, but I was fully engaged because I knew that he loved what he did. And that was evident even for a 7-year-old kid. And so that was kind of the model or the idea that I held on to after my undergraduate studies, thinking, okay, what's the next step? What's something that I can aspire to be? And Bill was the first example that I can think of. And yeah, and to this day, he's still a role model. Had a chance to interact and meet with him in at the end of 2019 in San Francisco at this event called Planet Home. And we had a great conversation. We even took a selfie together. And that was just like such a beautiful full circle moment to know that one of my biggest role models, you know, was still doing the work that he loves, which he does so beautifully.
All right. Well, we're officially live now, Danny. I just want to welcome everybody to another exciting session of Exploring by the Seat of Your Pants. My name is Joe Grabowski. And for those who don't know, we're all about bringing science, adventure, and conservation to the classroom. And I'm really excited to welcome Danny Washington today. Let's jump to Mrs. Ettinger's classroom in Hutchinson, Kansas, grade 4. And your mic is on.
My name is Ella, and what is your favorite experience underwater?
That's an awesome question, too. So, hi, Ella. My favorite experience underwater has definitely been the time that I swam with the giant manta ray in Ecuador. And I know that Mr. Grabowski has heard this story before, but it's still number one on my list. We were basically about 30 miles off the shore, offshore.
I think there's so much left to celebrate. It's not all gone. And I think by shifting the narrative, especially for young people who have a huge future ahead of them, we can't bog them down with the storyline of everything is lost, because it's not. Nature is resilient. We just need to give it time and space to recover. And that's going to take a concerted effort from all different people from all walks of life and giving them the tools to do so. We're seeing this upsurge of young people who are truly taking the lead in the conversation around the environment. It's powerful. And I believe in this next generation. I know that they're going to be the ones to turn the tide.
Back in a moment with an entire episode from The Genius Generation Season 1, the story of Luna Abadia, the 16-year-old founder of the Effective Climate Action Project. The Kitchen Sisters Present is supported by Article. Article is an online furniture shop, beautifully crafted pieces, quality materials, and durable construction. Their designers have drawn from a variety of modern design aesthetics like mid-century, Scandinavian, bohemian, industrial. Nathan, our kitchen brother here at the Kitchen Sisters, has ordered this fantastic pouf. You've got to go look at it online. It's called the Bomba. You can use it to put your feet up, sit on it, extra seating, which is great with kids. Fast, affordable shipping, and it's free on orders over $999. Article is offering our listeners $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. Go to article.com/kitchensisters and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout. That's article.com/kitchensisters to get $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more.
My name is Luna Abadia and I'm a 16-year-old. I'm fighting for all those around the world who are affected by climate change. This is my story. I often say this, and I'm going to say it again. Youth have the strongest voice in this fight. We're the ones with passion, the ones with the ability to view the world with hope. And so no one is ever too young to be a leader, to raise their voices and make a difference.
Hey, I'm Danny Washington, and welcome to The Genius Generation, the podcast about young people who are changing our world in big ways. On this week's show, my guest is 16-year-old Luna Abadia, who founded her own environmental organization called the Effective Climate Action Project, or ECAP for short. Luna was inspired to create ECAP when she realized how many climate movements focus on actions we can take as individuals. While individual actions are important, Luna wanted people to understand that we need bigger, systemic solutions to create the scale of change needed to tackle a problem this big. Luna, welcome to the show.
Thank you. So nice to meet you.
It's great to meet you too. We're really excited that you were able to make time to be with us today. So you're doing some important work related to climate change, this big topic that I think a lot of people grapple with understanding.
like how complex and interconnected it is and how it impacts every single human being on the planet. So tell me about the Effective Climate Action Project. What is it and what's the problem that you're trying to solve?
Yeah, thank you. That's so true. Climate change is a really complex issue and sometimes it's hard to know where to start. But our organization, the Effective Climate Action Project, is focusing on promoting effective and systemic solutions to climate change. So we're a youth-run organization that focuses on tackling this issue of climate change by engaging youth leadership and running interactive workshops that we call climate simulations.
Cool. So is it youth that are participating in these workshops?
They can actually be participated by anyone. So our participants can be anyone from middle school students to adults or climate change experts.
What are the different ways that ECAP tackles the problem of climate change?
ECAP hopes to tackle specifically the lack of awareness on systemic solutions to climate change. We often hear about solutions to climate change like planting more trees or taking shorter showers or avoiding plastic straws. And while these solutions are helpful, what we truly need is things like environmental policy and education. So ECAP has three core initiatives, and that's running these interactive climate simulations, doing online advocacy work, and local policy work. So we're currently supporting three different environmental bills in Oregon.
Wow. So you're already involved in policy change. You're interacting with folks who want to participate and learn about climate science in a fun, interactive way. The workshops that you mentioned, is it like a game?
Yes, exactly. One of them, the World Climate Simulation Game, is similar to Model UN, if you've experienced that before, where you get into groups representing different nations around the world and work together to create a plan to stop climate change.
So kind of like acting like a global leader or a leader of a nation and making big decisions for the people who live in your country.
Exactly. Yeah, we think it's really empowering to be able to step into that role of a negotiator and make those decisions yourself, because everyone has the ability to think of solutions and think of ideas. And then the best part of it is using this computer model called En-ROADS. And using that model, participants can see how their policies would actually impact climate change. So we try to aim towards 2 degrees Celsius. 2 degrees Celsius is the target that was created by the Paris Climate Agreement. The Paris Climate Agreement decided on trying to limit global warming to below 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. That can be a big mouthful, but what it really means is stopping our CO2 emissions so that we don't keep heating up our world to a dangerous level.
So let's revert back a little bit, maybe a few years, to think about when you first had an interest in science.
I think my interest for science began probably back in sixth grade. I was in my first science class. I hadn't had a science class until then, and it was a biology class. We were looking at cells under the microscope, and it really fascinated me how science allows us to connect with and understand this complex world around us, from the smallest organisms to the largest galaxies. And so from that point on, I actually kept a notebook called my Book of Questions. And I wrote questions that I had about the world around me. I had things like, how are clouds formed? And what happens when we cough? All these, you know, curiosities that have risen in my daily life. But I would definitely say that as a girl, I always felt a little bit like science was out of my realm. And I know there's been a movement for girls in STEM recently, but I definitely believe that we can do better to let girls feel welcome in this space. For me, it took consciously deciding to utilize science in this passion project, ECAP, for my confidence in science to build.
Wow, your Book of Questions. That is such a great idea. I wish I did that as a kid. That's awesome. Have you answered a lot of the questions that you asked yourself back in sixth grade?
I would say a lot of them, yeah. Sometimes I would research them, sometimes I would just keep them there, but it's more about the act of being curious and connecting with that part of yourself that just wants to know more. It's not necessarily finding the answer that I think is important.
Absolutely. That's how a scientist thinks. It's all about curiosity and asking as many questions as possible. Also, to your point about girls and women in science and STEM fields, I couldn't agree more. We still have so much more work to do to make sure that no matter what gender a person identifies as, that they feel included and that science mm-hmm. is for everyone.
Yeah, definitely.
So what attracted you initially to climate change as a focus?
The moment in which I most realized the impact of climate change was when I was studying abroad in Japan. So during my sophomore year of high school, I was a Rotary Youth Exchange ambassador, and I lived in Ehime, Japan for a year. During that time, I really saw the impacts of climate change firsthand. Increased typhoons, people tell me that there's no snow in the winter anymore, and that they're having difficulty growing traditional crops. And so I think having this personal experience opened my eyes up to the fact that these issues and impacts of climate change are global, and that our solutions need to be so as well.
That's rad. You lived in Japan for a year? So cool. Do you speak Japanese?
I do. I've been learning Japanese for about 4 years, self-study, because unfortunately there wasn't a Japanese class in my school, but I've been working hard and I hope to continue building my fluency in the future.
Do you speak other languages?
Spanish. My dad is from Colombia, so I grew up speaking Spanish at home.
Nice. So you are trilingual.
Yes, that's right.
Cool. All right, so let's get back to ECAP. Tell me the origin story. What initially inspired the idea for the actual organization? And was there a particular moment that you remember sparking that idea?
Yeah, so when I was studying abroad in Japan, I entered a speech contest and I wrote about the importance of taking action on climate change. So with that speech, I ended up actually winning the regional and prefectural levels of the contest and becoming a national finalist. And that amazing experience taught me that I think anyone can make a difference with their words and with their passion, and that I can make a difference for the climate too. So when I ended up returning from Japan due to the COVID-19 pandemic, I found myself wishing that, just like I had in Japan, others would gain this awareness of our global interconnectedness and how important these global issues like climate change are. So that inspired me to then create ECAP.
So did you have any setbacks or roadblocks that kind of were a bit hard to deal with at first, but then you found a solution?
A personal challenge that I've faced is learning, as both the founder and executive director of this project, how I can best motivate others to become leaders themselves. I think we often have this idea about leadership as being the one in charge or being the one to own it all, but it's not what it's really about. Leadership is about making sure everyone can feel like they can contribute and everyone feels like a leader in their own role. So learning how to make others feel that way has been a challenging but also really valuable lesson that I've had to learn through this.
That's a beautiful statement. I always revert back to this idea of leadership being a person or individual who's willing to be that motivator, who's standing next to the folks who are doing the heavy lifting sometimes, and being able to find the vision so that everyone can work toward one common goal. And that's definitely the same idea that we have to apply to resolving climate change. We have no choice. We're all in this together.
Definitely, yeah.
So did you have a breakthrough or aha moment, and how did it feel?
Oh gosh, yeah. There's been so many of those moments throughout this experience. But I would say that the most impactful moment was when we were running our first workshop. So that was a world climate simulation game, and we were running it for a group of about 20 students. I was nervous, but excited. And in this workshop, people were mentioning how they felt more hopeful and motivated to take action. And I was like, yes, that's our goal. Climate change is a really scary issue. And so without having that hope, sometimes we close up and don't know where to start or don't even know if we want to engage in the issue. But also we need that motivation to take action. And hope often drives that motivation, but we need that action to come from somewhere. So in our workshops, after running them, when people are still feeling like there's something I can do to change this, we then give them a list of ways they can specifically take action and continue to drive that hope, that sense of hope, into their future actions.
That's fantastic. How does it feel to see that impact?
It's definitely inspiring and motivating. One story that I love to think about is there was this girl that joined our organization, and she came in not knowing much about science at all or the computer model. It seemed daunting and she was scared of public speaking. But after going through our training program where we train youth to facilitate our workshops, she began leading these workshops for different groups, and she learned how to use this model and read the science, and then realized that she had a great passion for climate change as well. So we love seeing people like that, that truly take these tools and then create their own vision out of it.
Wow, that's awesome.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
So the last few years, we've seen different youth climate leaders pop up on the scene, folks like Greta Thunberg or Xie Bastida, who are really vocal activists who have been in front of the camera, and yourself as well. But what about the young people who are just getting started? How do they jump into this movement?
Well, you know, we really have this great tool of the internet at our disposal. And so I would honestly encourage everyone to start researching, find the local climate organizations that are near you and try to get involved. It can be as simple as sending an email to just make that first step into your own personal climate journey. I often say this, and I'm going to say it again, youth have the strongest voice in this fight. We're the ones with passion, the ones with the ability to view the world with hope. And so no one is ever too young to be a leader, to tackle climate change, to raise their voices and make a difference. If everyone is able to find something, whether that's climate change or girls' rights or racism or education, if everyone was able to care about making positive change and, of course, had the resources to pursue such passions, I believe our world would be in a much better place.
I love that. Luna, you're incredible. I'm super excited about everything that you're working on, and you still have so much road ahead of you. Thank you for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of The Genius Generation. If you want to learn more about Luna's organization and check out that awesome computer model she talked about, well, go to her website, effectiveclimateaction.org. If you enjoyed this episode, please make sure to rate and subscribe. The Genius Generation is a podcast created by Seeker and Trax. The show is hosted by me, Danny Washington. Emily Feld and Evan Hall are our producers. Caroline Roth, Brian Simigala, and Matt Morales are our Seeker producers. Our editor and sound designer is John Pappas. Our executive producers are Brett Kushner, Michelle Smalley, and Brian Pendergast. Our PA is Navani Otero. Thanks for listening. Funding for the Genius Generation comes from the Arthur Vining Davis Foundations, investing in our common future.
The Genius Generation and Danny Washington was produced by the Kitchen Sisters, Davia Nelson and Nikki Silva, and Brandy Howell.
Special thanks to Danny Washington, Shaquille Anderson, Corinne Yamada, and the folks at Trax and PRX. You can hear every episode from the first season of The Genius Generation wherever you get your podcast. The Kitchen Sisters present as part of the Radiotopia Podcast Network from PRX, independent, story-driven podcasts that widen your world. Thanks for listening.
Radiotopia.